David Eichel here with HawkeyeInsider.com. As always, Sean Bock. Sean, before we really dive into this, I know we've made it public on Twitter and everything, but I think we should talk about on the podcast really quick. Very happy for Sean, who's officially a full-time, full-time with 24/7. Full-time contributor. It's been, a long time coming, Sean. I think you surprised a lot of people and they didn't about you saying you were full-time. I think a lot of people already knew that, but well earned by you. Congratulations. And let's keep this thing rolling.
Yeah, man. I mean, I just kind of want to focus on, well, first of all, I just want to say, yeah, thank you to everyone for reading our stuff. You make all this stuff possible. I really do appreciate it. I know Dave does as well. So I want to keep this baby rolling for as long as we can.
Definitely. And I mean, I'll add on, I signed an extension as well. So, I mean, we'll be here for years to come. And to celebrate the Iowa win last night and that, you can get 2 months of premium VIP Hawkeye Insider access for literally $1, which is an absolute steal when, especially with all the recruiting news that's been coming out and Iowa landing Josh Dix in the 2022 basketball class. But we'll dive into that a little bit later this week. But Sean, I think we have a game we got to talk about, the most highly anticipated Iowa-Iowa State game of all time. And Iowa didn't falter. They came out, it was a little bit slow, I think, for both teams. But, man, I mean, that Iowa defense continues to somehow exceed expectations, Sean. I mean, I really don't know what more we can say about them. And it's very interesting to think back to the fall scrimmage and what the secondary showed that day and what the defense showed that day. And I think you and I talked about it at the end of that podcast. It might be the best thing that happened to that Iowa defense. I mean, we saw how, peed off Bill Parker was after that scrimmage, made a V line right to the locker room. And I don't even want to know what he probably said to them. Let's be real. But it was probably not appropriate for the podcast, but Sean, I mean, the secondary showed up big. Four takeaways from Iowa State. Let's dive into it. I mean, it was a pretty all around outstanding performance for the Iowa secondary.
Yeah, it was very impressive. And, it was Riley Moss in week one. Obviously, Dane Belton had an interception too. But this week you get Matt Hankins. And then at linebacker, you get Justin Jacobs, two guys that really seem to put together a great game for Iowa. And, Matt Hankins, he's gone through a lot throughout his career. I remember, he's been, a starter for a while, but, a lot of people have been critical of him. I don't think it's been to the point of Riley Moss criticism, but, Hankins has had kind of an up and down career throughout his time at Iowa, especially when he started. I believe he got, if I'm not mistaken, he got benched a couple years ago for his play. And, just to see that level of, him being able to rise to the occasion in a really big game. And, he made the plays he made were really big ones, and not just, that the two interceptions that he had, but how about in the first half when he broke up that deep pass that looked like it was going to be an Iowa State touchdown, that I know a lot of Iowa State fans were kind of upset that they didn't get a pass interference call, but there was another one like that later on in the game where Hankins broke it up. And yeah, I thought his play was really good. And, there were moments where I think veteran guys like Jack Kerner maybe would want a play or two back from that game. But I think you have to look at the final result, and just the way that Iowa's defense was able to perform is incredible. Like it was just a really weird game.
It was.
I know like that's kind of a cliche, but it just felt like a really odd game because Iowa's offense, whenever they were on the field outside of a couple of drives, like the only way they scored the football, if I'm not mistaken, was off turnovers.
They got 37 in two games. They got 37 points off seven turnovers. I believe that's about 5.3 points per turnover, which is, I mean, that's absolutely insane, Sean. I think that, the thing that really separates this secondary from past years, I mean, there's swagger. And there's a lot of confidence with this team. I think you look at the post-game tweets just in itself. And I think the thing that really stood out to me, Sean, was in the post-game when Matt Hankins was asked why he really didn't do much to celebrate after he had the first interception. He just goes, "You just gotta act like you've been here before." And that was like one of those eye-opening comments to me, because he opened that press conference by saying, truthfully, I could have done better. He took a lot of the blame for the big 49-yard pass that Brock Purdy had. I believe it's Darren Wilson that would set up their first touchdown drive of the game. But Jack Kerner, I don't think he was in a good position to make that play. And I was not a big fan of the prevent defense in that standpoint. I think you only do the prevent defense when you're doing a Hail Mary or kind of a, you know, just kind of whatever. But no, I think you're exactly right about Hankins. I think that he has had an up and down career, but this secondary, Sean, we kind of led up to it. And I think a lot of people were kind of speculating because it didn't have that household name entering this year. But this is probably the best Iowa secondary it's ever had, at least in the Kirk Ferentz era. Just as a collective unit, there's been no weakness among the bunch. Yeah, there might be a mistake here or there, but it's pretty incredible what they've done so far.
Yeah, and I think you look back at the Indiana game, I honestly think that was more – I don't want to say more of an impressive showing than it was this week because, I mean, getting Iowa State to bench Brock Purdy – a guy that's been their starter for what, the last
4 years?
Yeah, 4 years. And like started in the middle of the 2018 season. I think he took the job over. Then you talk about 2019, where they had a good year, 2020, where they had arguably their best year in school history, in program history. And for Iowa State to bench him, like that's, and for Iowa to like get them to do that, that's very,
Iowa's two for two in benching right now, quarterbacks. And these are two highly respected quarterbacks.
Yeah, probably up near the top in their respective conferences, I would say. I mean, I know Brock Purdy, obviously, Iowa State fans would say he's probably up there. But in terms of consistency from what I've seen, you know, he's kind of just had a weird career. We were talking about that with Michael Swain of our Iowa State site yesterday, just that he seems to like try to do too much when he's struggling. And that's ultimately what one of his big downfalls was. But, yeah, I thought that, you know, the run game, I thought Iowa State did a good, or Iowa did a good job of limiting them. I thought the defensive line, I thought Joe Evans was probably the standout defensive lineman from the day. I think he had five hurries on the game, and I know he had a sack. I honestly thought the tackling was a little meh for most of the game.
I think for Breece Hall and his couple big runs. And I think, Sean, we do need to mention, I think John Wagner really did a good job in the first couple of drives setting the tone because he wasn't getting pressure, but he had the two pass deflections, which halted their drives immediately.
Right. Yeah, and that goes off the Hankins stuff too when he had that big pass, when he broke up that pass that was going to be a touchdown had Iowa State caught that. But, yeah, I mean, I thought the defense, I think the linebackers didn't really have their best game. I thought Justin Jacobs obviously was really good, but I think Jack Campbell and Seth Benson, I know Benson kind of struggled a little bit in coverage, but that's what kind of what you have to expect when you're going up against a Big 12 offense because, you know, they like to spread it out. While Iowa's more of a physical kind of like defense that, you know, I think the linebackers are good in coverage, but I don't think that's going to be a strength. You know, I think they rely a lot on their secondary to cover a ton of ground. And I think that's where the guy like Justin Jacobs came into such big play. I mean, I know Charlie Kohler had four receptions, the Iowa State tight end, but there were a couple times where Jacobs looked really good in pass coverage and just moved really well. I think he had one of the higher pass coverage grades on Pro Football Focus for Iowa. And he just looked really good. That was a really – I know a lot of people were – when – Seth Wallace mentioned it earlier in the week that Iowa was going to go more with the 4-3 look. You know, a lot of people thought it was going to be a smokescreen, but, you know, they went with it, and it worked out. I mean, Justin Jacobs was really good for Iowa.
He's putting it together.
He is, yeah. He was very strong for them, and, you know, I think the linebackers didn't have their best game, but, you know, other guys picked them up, and that's kind of what makes a good defense.
And I think the thing, Sean, is Iowa's not doing things to hurt themselves. I mean, remember last year, the first couple of games, they were struggling with penalties as well. I mean, I think this has kind of been an underlying storyline. I mean, Iowa had 5 for 50. There was one really weird call, though, where it was Kyler Fisher's helmet came off and he kept continuing to play. And that was a 15-yard penalty. And I hadn't heard of that penalty in memory if I'd even ever heard of it before. So that was an interesting one. And I think Iowa only had two penalties in week one. So, I mean, I think that goes a long way. And Iowa's not shooting themselves in the foot. They're not. I mean, they're waiting for Iowa State to make their mistakes, and they did. And I think the thing is, too, you talk about winning the game within the margins, Sean. I mean, people might say some of the interceptions are a fluke because it bounces off a receiver's hand or it goes through. Well, the player still has to be in the right position to be able to make the play and capitalize off it. And that's exactly what Iowa's done. I mean, Seth Benson had his interception the other day. He was a step behind, but he was still in the right position to be able to make the play after the ball slipped through the wide receiver's hand. So I don't think you can really overlook that. And, you know, it was interesting listening to Justin Jacobs, Sean, yesterday when he talked about forcing the fumble when Jack Campbell had the scoop and score. He said he didn't even realize he punched the ball out till after he, like, looked up and all of a sudden Campbell's in the end zone. And when you look at the angle on it, I mean, he just got off a block and his body shifted and he just kind of grabbed onto Hall, but he punched the ball just enough. And it was really one of those just football savvy plays. And I think that strictly in the film room, I think that's strictly a lot of strength and power. I mean, Justin, what he's, you know, what they've done to him physically is pretty, pretty insane. But Sean, we'll dive in here. The questions. I know there's a lot of people about the want to talk about Petras. There's a lot of people that want to talk about the O-line. But really, the last talking point before we get to these questions is Torrey Taylor is probably a top three punter in the country. I mean, what he was doing yesterday was absolutely ridiculous. I mean, Sean, I think yesterday his average was more than the NFL leader from last year. And he punted seven times last night. And I know it's a small sample size, but like Taylor's getting these off effortlessly. And that 69 yarder he had probably would have went 80 had Terry Roberts not downed it. But to be fair to Terry Roberts, it did look like, at least from the press box, that went off the Iowa State guy's foot. So I think it was still a really good savvy play by him to at least take that precaution. But yeah, I mean, Sean, I mean, Torrey Taylor, you talk about one of your best offensive weapons. I think you need to throw Torrey Taylor in that category.
Yeah, and Quinn Douglas put out a really good stat, too, about average starting position, field position by quarter. So Iowa State, first quarter, started out, average was the ISU 15, second, ISU 20, third, ISU 21, fourth, ISU 22. That is really – that, like, all starts with, yeah, like, you know, the preference is to score the football, get the football in the end zone. But when you have a weapon – like Torrey Taylor that's able to set you back as much as he did, like that is huge. And look at Iowa. Iowa started on the 38 in the first quarter. Second quarter, average was 40. Third, the Iowa State 45. Fourth, Iowa 34. That is like, obviously, you know, 34 is closer to the other numbers, but that's a 20-yard difference that makes, you know, all the difference in a game like that, you know. And even with the Iowa's offense, with the way they weren't able to move the ball as well, that's still like, that's just a huge, like, just boost for them, you know. And, you know, just, I mean, obviously with last week, we talked a lot about the defense and Torrey Taylor didn't have his best game, but that was just to see how much of an impact he makes. You saw it last night.
I think, and I think, you know, Caleb Shudak, obviously he had the missed field goal, but that was just due to a bad snap. I really don't think it was as much his fault, but he got the job done. Charlie Jones, man, I don't know how he avoids the first tackler every single time. Cause there are a couple of them, Sean, where, you know, you kind of cringe almost because you know, a guy is just about to take a massive hit. And it looked like there was a couple of times where he did that. And he somehow just, I don't know if it's his quick feet or his short area quickness to be able to avoid those guys, or if it's a natural knack of it. It's just it's interesting to see just how complete this Iowa special teams is. And, you know, I know a lot of people are going to make a big deal about, you know, the lack of yardage. And I do think there is something you need to take away from that. But at the same time, if you're taking over an opposing territory and you're still putting points on the board, like, it really doesn't matter. Like, I know some people are talking about Iowa State double the yardage, Iowa State this, Iowa State that. Yeah, but it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it's still football. Iowa put up 10 points in the third quarter, Sean, and they had negative 6 yards in the third quarter. I mean, that's just a very Kirk Ferentz-like team. But there's a lot – like, there's – this is going to be a very interesting football team to follow because they passed both tests with flying colors. And I think this is an ideal situation for Iowa, especially on the offensive end. they did enough to not give the game away and to basically put themselves in obviously a position to win. But now they're going up against two, I don't want to call it tune-up games, but I mean, there's, you know, Kent State, Colorado State, no, anywhere near Iowa State, Indiana. This is, the next 2 weeks are going to be such a big thing to utilize for momentum and confidence for this offense going forward. They got to be able to string some drives together. I think they need to get Tyler Goodson going on the ground. I think that the, especially the offensive tackles, they got to get some consistency and they got to get some confidence. And the wide receivers have to get involved. They have to. You're not going to be a Big Ten championship team if you don't have wide receiver involvement. Even as elite as Iowa's defense has been, Iowa does have good players at wide receiver, but they got to be able to get them the ball and put them in a position to succeed.
Right. And you know, the term defense travels in basketball, that I think that applies for football, but with football, one or two plays can make a huge difference in the game. While basketball, you know, that obviously holds true, but football, that seems to carry a little more weight. So if your defense, you know, gives up one or two big plays and, you know, can't force any turnovers, which seems hard to believe now with this Iowa team, you know, you have to have an offense to lean back on at times. And through the first two games, I mean, you see improvement, but, you know, the run game outside of Tyler Goodson's one touchdown run against Indiana on the first drive, like, it hasn't really been there. I mean, I've liked what I've seen from Ivory Kelly Martin, but with Goodson, I just haven't seen it yet. And, you know, that falls back on the offensive line too.
Yeah.
I thought the offensive line run blocking was okay on Saturday. Not anything bad, but not good. I thought the pass blocking could have been better too. I think with Iowa State too, that's going to be one of the better defensive teams that Iowa plays this year.
Yep.
Their defensive front is really good.
Yep.
And they were without Orion Vance, and their linebackers are very good.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So I think you got to take away some of that and be like, okay, yes, they're going to play some good defensive teams too, but I don't know if there's one that's going to be up there with Iowa State. I think Wisconsin's going to be good. I think
Penn State's
talented. I don't know how good they are defensively. I think they're talented, though.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how that all goes about with Big Ten play. I think the next two games for the offense are going to be critical. I mean, believe it or not, like non-conference games, yeah, like, you know, they don't hold as much weight, but those are games that you have to win. And those are games where you're able to do different things and you're able to work on different things that maybe you wouldn't do in a conference game if, like, the situation allows it. Obviously, you know, Colorado State is not good. I'm expecting Iowa to win that one big, but Kent State offense is pretty prolific. So, and the defense is not that good. So I think these next two games could be real confidence boosters for the offense and, you know, just getting that foundation, getting that confidence going into conference play. Because, I mean, yeah, I know Maryland's not, you know, anything sexy, but, you know, they're
passing the ball well.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I would say this is going to sound weird. I would say they're a sexy team in terms of, like, the talent that they got on the field.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's like, are they a good football team? That's the big question. But, I mean, they're a Big Ten team. And, you know, your defense could be really good. But if the offense isn't there, like, how much can you really rely on that? Like, what's the ceiling of a team that where the offense is not playing
average,
close, yeah, playing near to the level of the defense?
10-2. I mean, that's probably my opinion, and that's why I picked Iowa to go 10-2. But I did think the offense would be a little bit farther along. But we'll dive into this with some questions because I know there's a lot of them, Sean. But I will say, I think you're exactly right about the confidence booster. I think the next 2 weeks, even though it's against lesser opponents, you got to see Tyler Goodson go for over 100 yards in both games. You got to see wide receivers get a touchdown. You got to see Spencer Petras stay in the pocket and deliver the throws. Because when he sets his feet, he is a totally different quarterback. I mean, that throw to Charlie Jones at 26 yard, that might be the best throw he's ever made in Iowa uniform. I know the long ball to Demir Smith-Marset was great last year, but that Charlie Jones one, that was so perfect and so out of reach of the defense. And Charlie still can make a great catch, don't get me wrong, but he didn't put it in harm's way. And it was, I mean, that was, it was a pro level. It was an NFL level throw. It was, but you got to see them get involved. And you got to see Tyler Goodson be able to go, and you got to see the O-line get some consistency. I know the issue is not at guard right now. I do think, though, that Kyler Schott's going to be a big difference maker when he comes back and he's healthy, just because he's consistent. And I think that confidence does trend along the offensive line. And again, I know people are going to be all over, I think, Mason Richmond. Mason Richmond's going to be a really good tackle. I think he's going to be a really, really good O-lineman for Iowa. He's got all the tools in the world. He's just got to continue to develop and continue to get that experience, which is what the next 2 weeks are for. So let's dive into this, Sean. It's how can we get Tyler Goodson going? Outside of one run this season, he has been non-factor. It worries me going forward. I mean, I'll start with this. Sean, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said, first of all, it's not all Tyler Goodson. It's not. It's not all the O-line. It's a combination of both. I do think the run blocking has a lot left to be desired, specifically on the outside. I think there's a reason why, Sean, we're not seeing as much outside zone, because we don't know if the tackles can really handle that at this point. And I will be fair. I mean, it's not even just the O-line's fault. I mean, what was it, the 20-yarder? Goodson did get in on this drive, Sean. But remember, the Goodson could have got to the outside, but Potterbaum missed the very last guy. I think it was the same exact play that they ran on that 56-yarder against Indiana. But Potterbaum and the tight ends hit that block, but Potterbaum missed it on Saturday. And that would have been a touchdown. They ran the same play later. Potterbaum hit the block, and I think Goodson got 16, 17 yards, but wasn't as open because they'd shown that look before earlier in the game. So I think Tyler is still going to be a very dynamic back. I think he's going to have a big, big games this year. I think he's going to win Iowa a game with a big performance. I also think at times he's not, I know what you were saying about Ivory Kelly Martin. You like the way he explodes through between the, in the trenches and the tackles. I mean, that burst that he has, it's pretty, it's a different, a little bit of a different gear than Tyler. I think Tyler's dancing around the tackles too much because he's looking for that next big play, that next 56 yarder that like he had. I think if he just continued to move his feet, he'd be getting 2, 3, 4 more yards on the ground. Some of those that were stopped short. I wouldn't worry about Tyler. He's a diligent worker. He's versatile. They're going to figure it out. The O-line is what I'm more worried about than Tyler Goodson. But I will say, I like Ivory, what I've seen from him, Sean. But at the same time, you're wondering if he's going to fumble the ball every time he touches it.
Yeah, we'll say on Pro Football Focus, Goodson's runs yesterday, the ones that were off the right side tight end, he was 3 of 22, so 3 carries for 22 yards. Yep. With that 13-yard run. To the left, he had 3 carries for 2 yards. So, I mean, take with that what you will, but, you know, I think the stats can be skewed because of a big run, but, I mean, it was similar to what it was last week with that touchdown run. I think he just seems more comfortable running to the right side. And, you know, I think that's common with most running backs, but I think that holds a lot of truth with this, with Goodson as well, and you've seen that in games. He hasn't been too productive running up the middle as of late. I think he's getting like 2 to 3 yards per carry, if that. Yeah. I mean, that's something that's got to get better. And I think we saw more potential. I think we saw more improvement with that last year than we did this year at this point with Goodson. So, yeah, I mean, I think it'll figure it out. I think it'll figure itself out. I think as the offensive line continues to work with each other more, that everything's going to come together a little bit. But you definitely like to get Goodson more production, just more holes for him to be as good as he is.
So again, I mean, I think the way you get him going is, I think you trust the outside zone. I think you go to the right. And I think Luke Lachey, I think, has made some really nice blocks when they pulled him and he's kind of led the way. I really liked what I saw to him. I think Iowa's just got to continue that mantra. And I think the reality is if they break off a couple bigger runs, I think the confidence is going to go a long way. I think confidence, strength, and swagger, if they have that, I mean, I think they'll be able to get going. So I look for more outside runs. I like to see Iowa utilize the play action more too. I really think that could be a very big weapon, even in the run game. I don't think that they've really kind of gotten away from that. And how many times over the years, Sean, have we seen Iowa have a big play due to a big play action throw? I mean, I think back to this, you know, the first thing pops in my head is 2015 Big Ten title, first play of the fourth quarter, play action, they throw a bomb to Tavon Smith, goes 80 yards, touchdown. So we'll see. I think more outside zone, sticking to the right. And I'm also, again, I think once Kyler Schott gets in there, and again, I know it's not guard, I do think that that's going to just going to help it in that regard too. Thoughts on the O-line play thus far versus competition? I think we kind of already dove into that. I mean, Tyler Linderbaum's just doing what Tyler Linderbaum does. He's proven he's going to be a potential top 15, top 20 pick based on a couple of mock drafts I've seen. If he likes to go to the NFL after the season, I think the tackles have potential. They got to continue to develop. And I think once Kyler Schott gets back, I think Iowa's going to be fine come October. But the next 2 weeks, like you said, Sean, might be the two of the most critical weeks just as far as where this team's potential can actually go for the rest of the season.
Yeah, most definitely. And we dove into that earlier, so we don't have to get too much into it. But, yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think this is a week where they can really get the run game going. And I think, too, they can air it out. I think you want to see a guy like Tyrone Tracy get more targets because I think six targets or two games is not enough for him. I know Iowa State, I thought, did a pretty good job of staying on him, but there were a couple times, again, where I thought Petras might have missed him downfield.
Yep.
And they could have been, you know, potential big plays. I know, you know, you got tight windows and you never know what's going to happen, but I think, you know, Iowa might need to take some of those risks even more with Tracy down there.
I will say this, too. I meant to bring this up earlier and I spaced it. I don't think it's fair to throw the whole blame on Petras. I know he's a quarterback. It's easy to, but like there are times I think where the pocket collapsed so quickly. I don't even know if Iowa's receivers were able to break out of their routes. So I think that's something I'll need to watch closer in film, but that's something that's kind of crossed my mind as well. Offense, defense, and special teams MVP through two games. Tory Taylor, special team.
Tory Taylor and Charlie Jones. Sure.
The offense is, I mean, Tyler Linderbaum. Seriously.
On offense.
Petras for not making any mistakes.
I think that's a plus. I think that's a big positive. He was the highest score on Pro Football Focus for the offense today, which I thought was a little surprising. But
I think it's surprising from this standpoint too, Sean, is he took three third down sacks in opposing territory, didn't get rid of the ball. I mean, they took him out of field goal range twice.
Yeah, I'd have to look at his week one. But, I mean, I think Cody Ince did a good job. I thought he was the best offensive lineman on Saturday for Iowa. And Pro Football Focus backed it up. I'm going to go with – I don't want to say Petras, but I think I'm going to go with Petras. I thought Laporta, too. I mean, that's more week one, though. Laporta was targeted six times yesterday and only had one reception, which I thought was kind of eye-opening.
Yeah.
Especially considering that he's Petras' safety valve. And, you know, the one catch that he did have was a big catch for a first down. I'm going to say Petras now, but that's tough because that's what's a little concerning is that, like, you can't really spot one, you know?
Yep. Exactly what I was thinking too. Defense, I mean, I think you could say four people. I mean, I you know what? Phil Parker. I'm going Phil Parker. I don't care. I know it's a coach. I think the game plans he's had the past 2 weeks have been stellar. I know Iowa gave up that late touchdown against Iowa State. I mean, Phil Parker schemed up things beautifully. But you could also go – I mean, I think you could go Jack Campbell. I think you could go Matt Hankins. I think you could go Riley Moss. So, I mean, Sean, we could cop this out easily and just be like the entire secondary. Because Iowa's secondary has been the best in the country at this point. I think the top three defenses in the country right now, it's Alabama, Georgia, and Iowa. Probably.
That sounds about right.
So
I would say the corners. To be more specific, I would say the cornerbacks. Because I thought Riley Moss – correct me if I'm wrong. I thought he had a decent game yesterday, too.
I thought he did. I mean, there was just no picks, but it was interesting. Right. I think they threw more to Matt Hankins because of Riley Moss's two picks. So I think it will be very interesting to see how teams go forward trying to attack this Iowa secondary, because they go one side, well, it's two pick sixes. Well, the other side, okay, it's still two picks. And then Jack Kerner's going to come up with an interception or two. I think Kevon Merriweather will as well. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how it all unfolds.
I thought Kerner and Belton, I think, got caught up in that reception for Iowa State.
Let's see. After today's game, who poses the toughest challenge going forward?
Wisconsin, I would say.
I'm debating between Penn State and Wisconsin.
I think Penn State from a talent perspective, but I think Wisconsin just being as similar as a team to Iowa.
And it's in the West. Yes. That's going to be more critical.
And it's in Madison on Halloween.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. You know what? Yeah. Yeah. Wisconsin just for the, that was a good point. Unproven players coming into the year that have impressed you. I would say
he was unproven, but I think Joe Evans.
Yeah.
He had a good game yesterday.
He did.
I thought John Wagner's been better than a lot of people expected, too.
I think he's got to just continue to develop the pass rush. But I think this Iowa team, Sean's done a great job of when they know they can't get to the quarterback, they are getting their hands up and they are affecting passes at the line of scrimmage. And that's just as good as the sack in all reality a lot of the times. I'm going to go Justin Jacobs. I know it was kind of expected he'd take a big step forward, but until you really see tangible evidence on the field, you can only write about him so much or write about players so much. And his athleticism, I mean, he's even more athletic than I thought, Sean. I mean, he's going to be really, really good. And I think what a luxury for Iowa. I think they could effectively run a 4-2-5 and a 4-3. Go right with Belton or Jacobs. So I'll go with him. When do we start requiring rent from the Cy-Hawk Trophy? Heard we had a true freshman long snapper on the botched field goal. Did he play last week? Correct me if I'm wrong. The true freshman came in. Austin Spiewak was the long snapper for the field goal itself, right?
I could be wrong. I honestly couldn't remember which one it was. I know it was Luke Elkin is the true freshman long snapper, but I couldn't tell you exactly which play it was on that he was in. I'd have to go back and.
Well, they had the high snap.
Yeah, I know, but I wasn't sure if it was that play or they put him in for the next play.
I'll go back when I do my film breakdown. I'll go back and I'll look at the first field goal and I'll see who it was. On a sad note, until the last Iowa State touchdown, Iowa's defense outscored the opposing offense 21-16. Why hasn't Tracy gotten more receptions? I mean, I think we touched on it earlier, but I'll just repeat it really quick. I think him not getting out of his breaks, I think Petras just not seeing him downfield at times has played a factor. And when Iowa needs to check down, they're going to take the safe yards rather than go for the home run. Pretty much sum it up, Sean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How much of the takeaways are hiding Iowa's deficiencies? I don't think it really does because they're taking it away and we're only through two games. So I think, go ahead.
Offense. I think it's showing some of the offense's deficiencies. I mean, I think the offensive deficiencies are evident.
Yeah.
But you know, I think it hides it a little more.
I think so too. But as far as the defense, I mean, look, Iowa's not getting to the quarterback at a high rate right now because they don't just have that proven explosive veteran guy. Like Van Valkenburg's consistent on the edge, but he's not going to be that hardcore pass rusher, you know. But Iowa's staying in their gaps and they're staying fundamentally sound. And that's all they really need to do in the back seven's that good. So I don't think it shows much about the defense. I think it does show more about the offense. But again, I think the offense right now through this point and what we've seen, it speaks for itself. Let's see. We have a couple of basketball questions. We'll dive into that during our podcast this week when we preview the Kent State game. So I'll save the questions.
I'll answer those on the board.
You want to do that? Okay. That's fine too. How concerned should fans be about the offensive line, wide receivers, and Petras? How much the problem is going to go away once Shot's back? We dove into it. I think the receivers are fine. They just need to find a way to get the ball. And I think good protection, if they can find a way to pass block more consistently, give Petras more time, I think it's good. solve itself. The one thing I will say about Petras, he may be taking sacks on opposing territory, which needs to go away, Sean, but he's not throwing passes that he did last year and putting them in harm's way. Like these are like a lot of his passes. They have little to no chance of getting intercepted. I think he's been very good about that, whether it be because of checkdowns or whatever, and maybe not taking as many deep shots as he maybe did earlier last year. He has not put the ball in harm's way so far. And I think that still needs to be noted.
I wonder if that's why he took as many sacks as he did yesterday. He just doesn't want to take the risk of throwing the deep ball like that.
Yeah. I mean, I that's a good point, maybe, but at the end of the day too, I think that the timer needs to go off in the quarterback's head, and at that point just get rid of the ball and at least save the points. So I get maybe not trying to throw downfield, but that's a good incompletion. If you're about to get sacked, nothing's there, and you throw the ball out of bounds and you save a field goal opportunity, that's a good incompletion because you're still have a shot to put points on the board. But by taking the sack, it just takes you completely out of the equation. And yeah, Torrey Taylor, to be fair, the best Iowa offense and defense, again, could come from Torrey Taylor, because if it's a short punt, he can pin them within the 10-yard line, which is what he's 20-yard line. I mean, it's what he's consistently done. So again, it's kind of one of those, depends on the style of football you want to play. If it's new Kirk or old Kirk, let's see when will you see the freshman wide receivers? Will the lack of offensive playmakers catch up to Iowa in conference play? I think you'll see a lot of Keegan Johnson, Arlen Bruce in the next 2 weeks. I mean, I think they'll have a shot to play. Maybe they can prove.
I think you'll see more, but I don't know if you'll see a lot.
Yeah. I think that's a good point too, because I was just trying to get the confidence from their starting unit. So they might play them longer. They might play until 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, then just run the ball out. So let's see. Will the lack of offensive playmakers catch up to Iowa in conference play? Again, I don't think Iowa lacks playmakers. I really don't. I think there's a protection problem and there's just not a lot of confidence going around. But like, I think we've seen what Tyrone Tracy can do. Nico Reganey, if he can get going, he's a reliable weapon. Sam Laporta has proven. And I really like what I've seen out of Luke Lachey through these first two games. He's had a big catch in each of them. He's blocking well, which was a big thing for him coming in. And I really think he could be a red zone threat later on in the year. I think he's got that sort of ceiling. And Tyler Goodson is first-team All-Big Ten running back. I don't think it's offensive playmakers. I think better protection and confidence from the tackles specifically, I think that's going to go a long way into solving those issues.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Let's see. Why hasn't Petras been able to throw the long ball consistently since he's practicing so hard on it all spring and summer? I know he's missed a couple, but at the same time, I think we've seen him make those 15-yard throws that he did even struggle with last year, hitting – like there was a drop by Sam Laporta yesterday. It was a great throw by Petras, I think, on that third and long. And I thought he made a great throw on it. I don't think he's had the time. I don't think the plays have been able to develop to take those sort of deep shots, Sean. I really don't. I think that the defenses have been able to get in the backfield. And the reality is Petras, I think, can hit that when he sets his feet and he can go through the motion. The biggest problem he has is not resetting his feet after he has to either escape the pocket or maneuver in the pocket. If he can step back and stay in his mechanics, I really think he can hit it, because guess what? He hit the 26-yarder yesterday and he was staying in the pocket. He stayed strong in it and he delivered it. And I think that's what he showed. I mean, he's got the potential to be able to do it.
Yeah. It all comes down to getting his feet underneath him and just being composed. I think that's really, that's kind of thing for all quarterbacks, but especially comes, it's notable with Petras for sure.
Do you think the offense play calling is because of situations the defense has put Iowa in, or are you concerned? I actually thought Brian called a good game yesterday. I I know people are going to look at the yardage and maybe cringe when I say that, but I think specifically, Sean, of that first touchdown drive, the 49-yarder, there was that second and third down play call, and I looked at you and I said, dude, that was – those are two outstanding play calls that got them into the first and goal situation. Again, I think it's all about letting the plays develop and taking what the defense gives you. But like you said, Iowa State's defense is going to be one of the best defenses they face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the Potabomb runs. I thought that was a pretty cool touch. Yep. That was an interesting way of going about it. And, I mean, they were effective. I think he got like 5 and 3 yards out of both of them. So those were smart play calls at the right times too.
Yeah, so I mean, I wouldn't really worry about that. I think Brian is going to continue to develop, and I do think Iowa needs to find a way to get the Wildcat going. I think it's a whole different look, and I think it can produce some big things down the stretch of the season. Mm-hmm. Okay, how serious of a problem is it that Iowa State was getting pressure while only rushing three? I mean, it's a problem. I mean, there's really no two way about it. Because they can drop. I mean, that's part of the reason why Iowa's wide receivers can't get open. If you don't have protection, you can have the best receivers, you can have everybody, you're not going to be able to move the football. And I think Iowa's interior is pretty settled. But again, that's why, you know, people may scoff at it. I'm going to repeat it though, Sean. The next 2 weeks for the offensive tackles are the most important 2 weeks of the entire season. I don't really know how much more we can really dive into it. They just need to keep getting in-game reps. They got to continue to get experience. They got to continue to develop. But I would like to see Mason Richmond take a step forward. And I really think Jack Plum's got to find a way to solidify one of the spots. He's the most veteran experienced guy at a tackle spot. And I'm not, you know, it's not a shot against him or anything like that. But he's got to be able to win one of those jobs. And he's really got to be able to hold down the outside.
I do think one of the things that was interesting with Richmond is Kirk mentioned a couple weeks ago that Richmond was kind of resilient throughout fall camp. You know, he'd have a bad day and he'd come back and have a really good day, or like at least battle to have a good day. So I think consistency, and if we've seen that through the first two games, I think consistency is a really big thing for him. And, you know, just getting that, just getting set, I guess. On the line, and you know, just knowing that, like he can play. Like I'm not saying he doesn't think he can play, but just finding that consistency is huge.
It is, and I think that about wraps up all of our questions. I know the AP poll is going to come out here in about 5 minutes. I would slot them at 3 or 4, strictly because of the resume. That's it compared to everybody else. I will say, though, I do think Iowa is a top 10 football team in the country at this point. Based on what I've looked at across the country, I think Alabama, Georgia are head and shoulders above everybody. I really don't know what to make of Oregon right now, Sean. I know they beat Ohio State, but I'm not really sure what to make of Ohio State right now either.
Right.
And I guess the last talking point, I do think we need to mention this too, is – how is this team going to respond going forward? Because all offseason, I when we talked about this, Sean, in person, I think on the boards and stuff, you know, I've said Iowa's going into this game with a chip on their shoulder because everybody was praising Iowa State going into this game. Iowa State was a favorite, and Iowa felt a little bit disrespected. And I think you saw that in the reaction of Kirk Ferentz when he talked to Holly Rowe on the sidelines after the game. I mean, he got emotional when he said, yeah, Iowa's still here. And he said, yeah. And he kind of did like the most grandpa laugh I think I've ever heard in my entire life. But how is this younger team going to respond? Because guess what? I know Jack Campbell talked passionately about the underdog, the Iowa mentality, said we're kind of mutts. Not anymore. They're going to be a top five, top six team in the country with that realistic shot at starting 6-0. Or 5-0 going into Penn State. And if Penn State wins out, that's a top five, top seven matchup. That will be the epicenter of college football for that weekend. Like, I know they're going to try to keep that mindset, Sean, but the reality is Iowa right now is they're getting as much buzz as I think they've gotten this early in the season in the entire Kirk Ferentz era.
Well, I don't team with two better wins Iowa right now.
There isn't. Yeah. I mean, Iowa's the only one with two ranked wins.
And that's for itself too. I mean, Indiana and Iowa State, those a lot of people were talking super highly into the year. Like, you know, new potential new, I mean, more Iowa State, but potentially being a New Year's Six team, like a college football playoff team. I mean, the season's still young, but so like just to get in and, you know, play the that you have against those two teams is like, I mean, I don't think,
especially for Iowa, who traditionally starts out slower. I mean, they came out red hot out of the gate. The defense was already intact. Again, I hate using this because I know we're supposed to be the ones breaking it down, but I'm just very curious about this team because we talk about this when we preview the entire season, Sean. If they start out 2-0, like this is going to be a talked about team. This is going to be okay. This could be one of those potentially special Iowa seasons. And based on the stuff I've read from national writers, I mean, Iowa's not a contender for the Big Ten West. They're talking already about they have a shot to be the Big Ten's best team already to this point and should be by the end of the season. Like, this is the highest expectations, especially with Ohio State losing yesterday to Oregon and what they've seen. I think Ohio State's going to get together and boat race people in the Big Ten. Like, let's be realistic. Yeah. But for a team that basically a lot of the main contributors played during a COVID year and were overlooked, especially after losing the first two games, this is going to be a lot of the team, like a lot of the players and contributors on the team. This is the first time they've really received a lot of buzz. So, I mean, Are they going to start out slow against Kent State or they could come out guns a-blazing?
Yeah, and I mean, I think we talked about that earlier too. It's going to be, I wouldn't say set the tone for the rest of the season, but I think it's going to be an indicator of what this team could potentially do the rest of the year. There's no doubt about that. I think it's going to be, you know, how they go about these 2 weeks, I think could also, you know, potentially, yeah, show how they come out against a team like Maryland, honestly.
Yeah.
So it's going to be fascinating. It's going to be really interesting to see how things go from here and, you know, what the potential ceiling of this team is.
It's also curious. I'm also buying a couple minutes so I can, you know, release the AP ranking in this. But I will say too, Sean, I mean, when they step down the competition though, as far as the Kent State and Colorado State, how are they going to respond going back to Big Ten play? You know what I mean? Because look, I mean, Maryland's still a different caliber team than Kent State, Colorado State. I mean, they do have some talent. I mean, obviously those are questions going forward. And let's see. TJ Hawkinson scored a touchdown. And a really random note, Bakari Evelyn, former Iowa guard, has now signed his first professional basketball contract as of about 30 minutes ago. So anyway, thought that was worth noting as well. But yeah, Iowa start out 2-0. Again, HawkeyeInsider.com. Get 2 months of VIP access for $1. Pro Football Focus grades every single week. Complete total coverage of everything. I mean, we had an incredibly busy day yesterday. Obviously, Iowa landed Council Bluffs guard Josh Dix. We were all over that as well. But yeah, be sure to follow us on Twitter at David Eichel, at SBach247, and at Hawkeyes on 247. And be sure to go to HawkeyeInsider.com. I try to buy as much time as I can, but the AP poll is not released yet. I'm sure right as I press end, it will. So go to HawkeyeInsider.com to see that. But we'll talk to you in a couple of days. And we'll preview all things Iowa, Kent State, as Iowa returns home. Thanks, guys, for listening and talking in a few days. Take care.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.